Hello and welcome to the Logistics Tribe. I'm your host, Boris Felgendreyer, and today I have Radu Palamario, headhunter from Elkhart Global, and Knut Allicke, partner at McKinsey & Company, on the program. Both guests are influential thinkers on the topic of supply chain leadership. And in this episode, the three of us explore how the last few years in particular have elevated the function of supply chain management inside many organizations around the world. But how can supply chain leaders actually capitalize on this development and permanently secure a supply chain management seat in the boardroom, as well as paving their own potential career path into the CEO role? You will find out the answer to this question and much more in today's episode of The Logistics Tribe. Enjoy. Hello, Radu. Hello, Knut. Welcome to The Logistics Tribe. Thanks for being on the program.
Our pleasure.
Thanks a lot for inviting us. Looking forward to the discussion.
Yeah, so am I. So I've been wanting to talk about leadership and supply chain for quite a while. And as so happens, you guys published a book on that topic not long ago that we will draw very heavily from here today. And of course, you are experts when it comes to leadership and supply chain. You talk a whole lot about that. Wherever I see you, whether it's on LinkedIn or in presentations, the subject and the topic of supply chain leaders is very close to your heart, particularly to Radu, right? Because you're a headhunter, a well-known, very visible headhunter who deals with leaders in supply chain every day, and also has a podcast by the same name. So it's very much down your wheelhouse. I'm very excited to talk to two experts on this topic. And to get us started, you claim in the book that the question that set you out on this journey to explore this topic and to actually work together exploring it is, why don't we see more supply chain leaders becoming CEOs? Which sort of surprised me, because I still very vividly remember a time, maybe 5-10 years ago, where it was all the rage, where people said, okay, this is the advent of the era of the chief supply chain officer. Remember that? The CSCO, chief supply chain officer, more and more people up in the ranks. Suddenly, supply chain has a seat in the boardroom. And by the same token, when Tim Cook became CEO of Apple, everybody was pointing out, hey, here's a guy that came from manufacturing and supply chain. So we all thought, okay, you know, we're finally here. Now it's finally happening. You know, supply chain leaders have a seat in the boardroom and they also advance to the CEO role. But here we are, 2023, and we're still talking about this, and you're still lamenting that we're not seeing more supply chain leaders advancing to the role. Do you have some numbers to actually prove that we're sort of lagging behind other functions like sales, marketing, R&D, finance, other roles that could advance to the CEO level? Is this sort of anecdotal what you're seeing, or are we have strong numbers to back up that claim that set of your book to begin with?
Yeah. So we indeed looked into the numbers. And we wanted to understand how many of the CEOs, and we took as a sample, we took the Fortune 200, and we looked into the German MDAX and DAX and these companies. So it's 200 plus 90 companies. And what we see was frustrating, and supports that there is a need to bring more supply chain people to the board. So in the Fortune 200, we have 11% of the CEOs with a supply chain background. And clearly that includes Tim Cook. So there are people, but they're not a lot. Mm-hmm. There are 13% of these companies have a chief supply chain officer. If you now look into the German DAX, MDAX, together, there's only one. The DAX has zero CEOs with a supply chain background. So this is clearly something where we would say, hey, here, we need to do something. And this is also where Radu and I said that, hey, we don't see enough. And isn't it something where we felt that supply chain leaders would make good CEOs? And that's what basically sets up for the journey to then interview people and kind of distill a bit the essence of what is it that these people do, and what is their story, so to say.
Yeah, and just to go back to that story about the German market, so here we're not talking about a situation where the name supply chain VP or supply chain leader or chief supply chain officer is just not widely used. So here you're actually taking into account other roles that are disguised, right, that have different titles but are sort of describe the same function in supply chain. So all of that, what we would describe supply chain, is underrepresented in German boardrooms and in the CEO role in particular.
Yeah. Definitely.
Got it. Radu, you wanted to add to that?
To the point of why do we think that supply chain should be more represented? Maybe let's go a little bit on that question as well. Obviously, both me and Knut are biased. Knut does supply chain and bread and butter. I place people in supply chain, and if I place them as CEO, I make a higher fee. But on top of that, the objective reason why, at least myself, I believe strongly that there should be more. Supply chain is the function that connects the whole organization. It moves data, it moves finances, money, it moves goods, produces, moves goods. You can argue, and of course we can argue that finance maybe has a certain level of depth that is similar, but I would say that supply chain has and sees everything. Yeah, and it's, some use the nervous system. If you were using an analogy of a human body, it's the nervous system. It makes everything move. So on that principle, following that analogy, I believe that there should be more CEOs that come from supply chain, because supply chain touches everything in the company. Now, historically, it's not been the place. And I mean, historically, if you look even past the last 5 to 10 years, there wasn't even a chief supply chain officer. That in itself, that role is fairly new in the overall scheme of things. I mean, we had logistics for a very long time, since armies existed and people right. fought battles and wars. We had manufacturing maybe from the 50s, 60s, and so on. Supply chain is a term from the 80s, 90s has started to be, but it's not that long ago, yeah? But now with the maturity of the function and of the term, of the capabilities, of the scope, it just makes sense that we should have more CEOs. But why we don't is because, again, historically, and all the people in the book, the 26 people, nobody had a background in supply chain. Supply chain didn't exist as a bachelor, as a master's, and so on, 20, 30 years ago, for executives to follow that. That's on one side of the right. of the coin. And on the other side of the coin, there's a soft skills element. There's a certain humility to the practitioners. There's a certain, okay, I don't need to brag to hit my chest with a brick, maybe, which comes a little bit with the sales function or with the marketing function. They don't go out and claim and say and share the value that they bring to the organization as much, which actually doesn't work in their favor, because when it is to appoint a CEO or the next board member, of course, this is extremely, extremely important. So I would say that's kind of the reason why we, Knut and I, thought that, look, let's, one, elevate the function, give some of these extremely concrete examples of where people from supply chain made a significant difference in their companies, and also hopefully inspire them to be a bit more vocal. We have a chain model that we'll talk about, be a bit more vocal and explain to the organizations the value they bring, so that they can be better positioned to be CEOs.
Yeah. Knut, just to linger a little bit longer on this sort of comparison to other functions and the way that other functions are more successful. So where are CEOs typically drawn from? What other functions outsmart supply chain functions in the race to the CEO role? Like where are these guys and girls coming from?
So that's clearly different by industry, right? So, but if you, and also building on what Aru said, that, you know, manufacturing is around since many, many years. So you see kind of manufacturing heavy companies, right? So here you have kind of CEOs coming from manufacturing. There was a time where we saw a lot of CEOs coming from finance, right? Which is kind of, hey, it was very important to kind of do the financial modeling, financial engineering. So here we have CEOs. And then there is a lot of CEOs that also come from sales and marketing, right? Because that is kind of seen as super important to make sure that we sell. Kind of the overall operations function was more like a operations support, sales to sell, right? And that's why CEOs come from sales. We had one of the interviews where one of the contributors basically said, hey, look, there's probably also phases where kind of what was important. And this guy was from India. So he said that, hey, in India, manufacturing was very important. So here we saw a lot of manufacturing people becoming CEOs. And then kind of it shifted kind of step by step. And that's why we also assume and see there is clearly now a trend that we have more supply chain people going into the board, still not yet enough. And if you think about why is that, because all of these global issues we have these days is basically supply chain at its heart, right? So you need to make sure that you kind of think end to end. You need to breathe end to end. You need to go into this holistic management of your supply chain, value chains. And this is something that is also very, very important for the CEO. There's a lot of quotes of CEOs nowadays when they do their investor briefings, where they kind of talk about supply chain, right? And this is where you can see that it elevates, where they say, hey, because of our supply chain, we could navigate the crisis. Whereas before, that would never be mentioned. So supply chain was more kind of the stuff that is in the back and is working. And only if something goes wrong, then it pops up. But it's never popping up if it's doing well. And this is now changing kind of clearly because of the disruptions. And one of my clients, I found this very interesting. He said that, look, with the pandemic, the board understood how important we are. We got a seat at the table, so to say, a seat at the table of the boardroom. And now kind of things are getting better. It's not yet over, very, very clear. It's getting better. And now we need to kind of prove ourselves that we deserve this seat. So not only do we need to fix, we also need to innovate. And I found this very interesting to kind of put it this way, which is also kind of pushing people in supply chain to continuously innovate and improve the overall situation.
There is a book, What Got You Here Won't Get You There, Marshall Goldsmith, small time book, extremely easy to read, recommended for everybody. I'm using it as an example to build upon Knut's point. COVID was a blessing in disguise for supply chain professionals and for supply chain at large. My daughter knows about supply chain. She's actually reading the book and she's 10. She's actually very upset with me. We didn't write a chapter about her. It's a separate story. And people found out about supply chain by and large. Now, from being at the table doesn't mean what got you here won't get you there. Doesn't mean that will last forever. So this is where we hope, and that's why we're doing also all these podcasts, where we're trying to inspire the supply chain professionals to look, the key things are in the soft skills. This is something that by and large, historically, has not been perhaps the main focus of the profession. It's the hard skills that were the main focus. They're still extremely important. I'm not saying, you know, all the data analytics, operations, Lean Six Sigma, logistics, planning. Of course, you need to know all of that. But let's just say, if you do not have the ability to communicate simply, to influence the board, to tell a compelling narrative of what is the value that you bring to the organization, how do you as the supply chain leader add clients, bottom line, EBITDA, all the good things that the business care about. By the way, not truck utilization, logistics network improvement, manufacturing output. They don't care about that. It's zero meaning to a board level, those buzzwords. Unless you have that ability and that narrative skills, you won't stay there. The board at some point will stop asking you to come to the board meetings because you're boring them. I mean, I'm sorry to be harsh, but I've seen it happen. And it's a muscle that we, just like when we go to the gym, over time, you can practice and you will not become Arnold Schwarzenegger in his prime to become Mr. Universe, but you can get better at these soft skills. I would urge all supply chain professionals, look into this if you want to keep your seat at the table and specifically if you want to become CEO.
Yeah, let's dig into that a little bit more later, especially giving some concrete tips of how to get from A to B, fulfill the vision that you're just describing. But let's linger on the COVID situation for just a couple of minutes longer, because you just said that it was a blessing in disguise for the role of supply chain. You could also argue the other side of the coin by saying, you know, the last 2-3 years really did shine a light on this whole function, but it also showed how brittle and how broken some of our supply chains still are and how messy this entire function still is. So you could also argue that it wasn't a pure 100% blessing in disguise, but also a revelation that for the longest time we were under this illusion that, yeah, everything's fine, everything's working smoothly, but if push comes to shove and the real crisis hits the van, then everything falls to pieces very quickly, which you could argue some supply chains didn't look too good in that scenario. Please comment on that, whether it's all blessing in disguise or whether also it's a double-sided coin. Okay, so to
excellent.
Speak.
Excellent.
So it's clearly kind of double-sided, but let's step back a bit and look into what really happened. Because what we read in the press is always, it's kind of, hey, we have broken supply chains. It's not going to work. We will not have our Christmas presents and so on and so on. If you look into the numbers, and that's quite interesting, the global supply chain system that did work as good as possible, but it was completely overloaded. And that's what people often forget. So for the first time since the early 70s, we have a supply shock. We don't have a demand shock, we have a supply shock. What does that mean? We have the US kind of flooded their people with money, right? They did spend the money, China was able to produce,
So if you kind of overload the global supply chain by 10, 20, 30% volume, very, very clear that you reach your capacity very soon. And this is exactly what we saw, right? So you reach the capacity and then kind of you have this kind of queuing and it's going longer. And so it's kind of getting to a self-fulfilling prophecy because it's getting worse and worse and worse. So from that perspective, that we always need to keep in mind that kind of supply chain kept the world moving, right? So did we have a food crisis in Europe? No, we did not have a food crisis, even though some people hoarded toilet paper. But the kind of it was working, right? So now you could also argue that, hey, isn't it kind of too optimized? And that's why it did break. And here I would agree, right? So here you have something where you kind of optimize further and further and further. And now kind of a small disruption happens. And this has, we all know the bullet effect, this has kind of follow-on effects. And also, it's also very clear that companies who did not have the transparency, do not have a proper end-to-end processes in place, discussion and IT backbone, they were hit harder. Fully agree, right? I always tell this story that a client told me that, hey, look, we planned with Excel, so I have no clue what I can produce. I need to go to the receiving area and see what came yesterday, and then I can do my production planning. That's clearly not good, right? So if you would upgrade, and this is what you see, we also did some surveys where we could see that the companies who did already kind of put in a proper supply chain manager, the board understanding that end-to-end is super important, they navigated the crisis indeed better. But as now everyone is talking about it, we should kind of use that with a positive spin and say, hey, you need to do something. You need to, so to say, ensure your supply chain to be not disrupted, right? Like a little bit like a car insurance. You need to have that insurance in place. And this is what we call risk and resilience. And this is what we call digital. And this is what we call end-to-end.
So one, two, blessing in disguise in the context of proximity to the board and in the context of supply chain, getting a seat at the table, being asked the hard questions. At the same time, I mean, ultimately, it is what do you do with it? I strongly believe there's no such thing as bad publicity, using a lateral analogy. I don't. I believe that a disgruntled client can be your best client. It's up to you what you do with the feedback and how do you do the customer experience from that point onwards to work towards a satisfied customer. I mean, I think most people will allow a mistake. Now, repeated mistakes on the same topic won't be allowed. So the fact that, of course, did supply chains work flawlessly? No. I mean, if you have a port, to make even more concrete the example of Knut, you have a port that can service 10 ships a day and all of a sudden you need 15 ships, how are you going to do it? You only have that one crane. You only have that one port. That's what happened. Like, I mean, is this the fault of the U.S. government or the ports of Europe that they should have thought that a pandemic will hit and should have planned excess capacity in ports? That doesn't happen in reality. So I would say it's what you do with it. It's what you do with the situation is the response to the situation that matters. It's not exactly what happens in the situation. And I think some supply chain professionals did well. Some did not. Some got fired. It is what it is. And look, I'll put it right there on the table. It was also a case where the CEO saved their own skin by blaming it on somebody. It does also happen. Yeah. So, unfortunately, the scapegoat in some cases was the CEO or the CSO.
Yeah, hindsight is always 20/20. But just to go back to the headlines and the stories that the media covered, there were tons of stories where in hindsight you're thinking, what were you guys thinking relying on one vendor for your entire supply chain? Like, why did you have single sourcing? Like, what in the world made you think that the sort of just-in-time management would work under the situation where we know disruptions will become more common? So why are we still relying on one vendor from one particular region as an entire industry, for example? There's plenty of examples of that where you look at them thinking, well, maybe we're very nonchalant about risk, right? And maybe now is a time where this all gets cleaned up, and that's the time where the right leaders step up to the plate, right? Knut, do you want to comment on, you know, we've had long discussions on single sourcing and just in time and all of that jazz. So maybe I'll let you comment on that.
Yeah. So a couple of thoughts. So you also read a lot in the press that just in time is over, which is quite interesting because people always kind of
refer to just-in-time as, hey, I have only one day of inventory, and that is not possible. But just-in-time is kind of, it's a philosophy, right? So where you kind of, you have that stuff on stock that is required to decouple, and then you feed the line, but you don't have more. Now, if the lead time gets longer and it's more unstable, you need to have more inventory. It's still a just-in-time system, right? It's just well configured. So let's not kind of mislead people. And then they have this kind of strange concept, which I don't understand as a supply chain professional, that's called just in case, right? Yeah, sure. If you need inventory, if you need components, you need them, right? So anyhow. What indeed the one element that you mentioned is kind of that if we look back to the war in Ukraine, what happened there? There was kind of an automotive supplier that apparently delivered to all premium car manufacturers in Germany, and they were so busy with the semiconductor crisis that apparently they did not look into these guys. And yeah. Guess what? There was a kind of a production stoppage for a couple of weeks where I was like, no, kind of, did you learn anything from the last 2 years yet? Again, this means that supply chain is not yet as elevated as it should have been. And there is kind of too much focus on this one thing. So it's complex systems. We need to understand complex systems, and we need to communicate these complex systems, and we need to make sure that we implement resiliency. Now, there is always this challenge that we say that to be more resilient, we need to implement something. And that something might cost money, whether it's inventory, whether it's express shipment, whether it's a new IT backbone, whether it's more people. If now the managers would say, hey, my KPIs are clearly quarterly driven, so if I spend money now on all of this, that helps me to be resilient if a disruption happens in 2 years. Why would I invest now? And this is kind of, again, something where we need to kind of lift it to the board level, because that's a strategic decision. It's like an insurance of the supply chain, and not kind of manage it down to the lower level planners. Again, a topic where the board needs to understand end to end and the implication, which is the nature of a typical supply chain manager, to take decisions to ensure, so to say, their supply chains to be much more resilient.
Okay, so again, just to finish up the conversation about the last 3 years, there was such a heavy emphasis and light being shined on supply chain that I'm wondering if there's some sort of supply chain fatigue setting in, right? Where it's, and on top of that, people having short memories where, okay, we're going back to normal now, to pre-COVID times, because things have smoothed down again, and sort of this fatigue about supply chain being the most important topic, and people going back to worrying about other things. Is this a real risk, or do you feel like this relevance and that newly gained seat in boardrooms is here to stay? Or what is the risk of that sort of falling by the wayside and we're going back to supply chain being not as important as it was in the last 3 years?
There's never a down moment, yeah? So now you have, just this year, you have, okay, the continuation of the war, you had the earthquake in Turkey, you have geopolitics that are playing more and more part. When was the Taiwan blockade? I don't remember anymore. I mean, I'm not so sure that there is a break that there's been. I mean, okay, fine. You don't have COVID at the height of COVID. Fair enough. Mm-hmm. But there's quite a few things happening in the world. And it doesn't seem that there's such a thing as normal anymore. I think it's just disruption at different levels. Mm-hmm. And you got to be able to navigate and to adapt to it, from the chain model. And I don't know. I've never thought about in terms of, I mean, interesting angle in terms of supply chain fatigue. And I guess, you know, if you are indeed writing in the press and at some point you get bored by a certain terminology, I haven't done data analytics on the press titles that they are using, but I know for a fact there's a lot of discussions in the angle or on the angle of geopolitics. How do you move your manufacturing? Where do you put it? Nearshoring, friendly countries versus not so friendly countries. How do you get closer to the markets? Why is Mexico booming? Is are people indeed leaving China or not? As of today, I sit in Singapore. There's a boom of semicon and electronics in Penang, for example, in Malaysia. They've run out of land to build factories anymore. Thailand as well, Vietnam as well. They're trying to put it in Philippines, in Indonesia. Maybe they don't call it supply chain per se as terms in the press, but I see a continuation of all of these discussions. Then you see China brokering deals in the Middle East, making peace between Iran and Saudi Arabia. There's a lot of things that are happening from a trade perspective. All of this is supply chain. Now, I'm not seeing at all a fatigue. I'm not seeing also at all a relaxation and everything is smooth sailing. Let me go and take a break for 2 weeks. I think the supply chain professionals haven't taken a break in 3 years.
Yeah.
And I'm not so sure that they will in the next 2 or 3 as well.
Yeah, so maybe this is after all the watershed moments, so the tipping point that sort of got us on the way to supply chain leaders becoming CEO material and then also advancing into the role. Let's talk for a little bit about the conversations you had with your book. Radu, you mentioned earlier that the format of the book that you both wrote together is based on conversations. It's based on interviews that you had with successful supply chain leaders from all different walks of life, from all different regions, from all different industries. Share with us what the overarching theme there is. What combines or what connects all of these successful folks? So these are all case studies of people who have made it, right? Who have advanced into the ranks or either in senior supply chain roles or in some instance even advanced into a CEO role. I remember there were a couple of examples of that as well. Talk to us about how those folks bucked the trend. And I mean, those are examples of people that have figured it out and managed to navigate all the way to the top. What is it about those people?
Without giving it away, because we do want you to read the book, but...
Yes, you should. And all of you should, of course.
All of the 26 actually did come from fairly varied backgrounds. None of them, like I said before, had supply chain education, formal education. So in itself, their careers were fairly different. There wasn't one that you could say this chapter is very much like the other chapter, because it's their personal careers, and being personal is not linked to a company. Hence, it's very much individual. So in that sense, it's very much 26 examples of how things can work out really well to the C-level. On the commonality of the thread, that's where we came up with the chain model, because when we analyzed and looked at the 26 interviews, there were 5 different soft characteristics, but soft skills are the hard skills. Soft characteristics, which we grouped under the chain model, which came out to be the successful traits that anybody can do, you, me, and everybody else, to have the best chances of being in an executive position. There's no guarantee. Ultimately, it is not like buying a toaster. You don't have a warranty for 6 months. But the chain model does give you the best chances of potentially getting there. And maybe I'll stop for a second. I'll let Knut explain the chain model. But that is the commonality across the different interviews. And that was the theme that came up again and again when people were talking about what made them successful.
Yeah, thanks, Radu. And before we go into the J-model, what I indeed found super interesting is that we did not kind of find two careers or two stories that were similar. We did not kind of write down a list of hypotheses to be tested or so. But I think what we expected is that there is some kind of career path or so in there that people would follow. And we found that, hey, they're so diverse, they're so different, they're all successful. And then we kind of digested the findings into the chain model, and you could indeed say that this is common to them. And clearly, a chain makes sense from a supply chain perspective. So, what does it mean? Let me kind of go through that, and then I'll feel free to.
Before we jump into the chain model, I have a one question related to that. Let's say instead of you having written this book about supply chain, you had written it about another function. And of course, that's not your expertise, but let's say you've had written it about marketing or finance and looked at different people's careers, had interviews. Do you think you would have found a different pattern there? In other words, would you have found more commonalities between the different characters, more sort of a streamlined career from A to B, which is predictable and sort of expected? Or is this something where you find, well, this is something that's very unique to supply chain? We couldn't have found it in any other function the way we did in the supply chain space?
So that's clearly not so easy to answer because we did not write the book on the other functions and we did not do the interviews on the other functions.
As I fully acknowledge, yes.
I feel that other functions are kind of more, I would say, straight. You start in marketing and sales and you kind of move around kind of always in marketing and sales, different regions whatsoever, different channels. But you kind of stay. There's clearly exceptions to that. Same, I would say, in manufacturing, right? But we cannot prove it. So kind of by the nature of supply chain being holistic and connecting everything, I think this also kind of speaks to the fact that what we saw is that people kind of work in all different areas also to learn, to understand, so to say, the other side, right? And with this kind of react.
Okay, makes sense. All right, now back to the chain model. I interrupted you.
Back to the chain model, exactly. So let me just kind of unfold what that is. We have C, the first letter of the chain model, and this is collaborative. And what we see here is that people we interviewed, they clearly go for relationships. And this is not only within the company, that is also externally, whether it's with customers or whether it's with suppliers. We had one of the contributors who told a story that, look, for our S&OP meeting, we invited our suppliers, our most important suppliers. And there was something where the colleagues were shocked. Hey, you cannot do that. Why would you kind of reveal our plans and why would you provide this transparency? And he pushed it through it. Guess what? It was a super success. So collaborate along the value chain is super, super important. Then you have, and Radu, please jump in if you want to add. Then you have H for holistic. So everyone talks about this holistic thing, but what is it? It's really understanding the big picture and understanding end to end and live and breathe end to end. Another example of a contributor was like, hey, we often tend to kind of blame sales for bad forecast accuracy. Well, it's very easy. I would do better if only sales would be better. No, let's look at it end to end and let's take the system as it is, clearly always trying to improve, but let's take the system as it is and let's set up the system to be successful. And kind of if we are in an environment, and that might be internally by whether that's marketing and sales or whether that's finance or whether that's manufacturing or whatsoever, then we need to kind of account for that and we need to kind of push this holistic thinking and we need to explain trade-offs. That's, we'll come later to another element that's very important. But we need to kind of think, breathe, and explain trade-offs along the value chain. Because we only kind of, if you look into this holistically, you can really, really understand. Then the A is adaptable. So we talked a lot about the risk and resilience now. We need to make sure that we are resilient, we are agile, and we need to be able to kind of adapt the system, the processes, ourselves to a changing environment. Very, very important. Then we have the I for influential. And influential is kind of, it could have a bad connotation, right? But what we really mean is that we need to empower people. What we heard throughout the interviews is that all of the contributors were very much kind of looking for empowering their teams, making them successful, kind of like you say, kind of B people hire C people and A people hire A plus people, right? So kind of they were all A people that hired kind of better people to make sure that the overall system is getting better and successful. Very interesting. One contributor also said that she kind of went on to a reverse mentoring concept. And then she said that, hey, last summer I took a Python course. We're like, in your role, chief supply chain officer, Python, why do you do that? Yeah, I need to understand how my team thinks and works. We need to also understand how kind of the young generation thinks and works, right? And kind of with this be influential. And then the most important, and here Radu definitely needs to comment, is narrative. So we need to kind of have the right narrative in place that people understand what we do, what we want, and why all of this is so important. So kind of explaining with, for example, with pictures, not with kind of big numbers and kind of KPIs that no one is interested in and also understands, but tell the story with pictures. A story sticks, a KPI does not stick, right? You remember a personal story that you tell. we had one contributor that said that, hey, look, if when I took the role as a COO in US, my first town hall was kind of me half an hour talking about how I and my family got here, what problems we had and how we managed to get here, and that we are super happy that we are here. He did not talk about anything like, hey, that's our margin, that's our KPI, that's our delivery performance and so on, but kind of personal stories. And that clicked very, very well with his people. And they immediately had a completely different base to start from. So narratives being super, super.
And if I might add, your book is a great example of how to do that. Typically, when you open a supply chain book, you know, at least on, you know, page 2 or 3 is the first eye chart, and then there's a formulas coming up, and then, you know, my eyes glaze over, and it's sort of difficult to make your way through a textbook style book. But here, it's the book that you've provided is based on stories, right? It's personal stories. There's not a lot of pictures, but it's stories. It's written in a narrative format, so you're already exemplifying how to tell the story right and to make it stick. I mean, there's a lot of stories that I remember because they were written in a narrative format from the perspective of a person that's experienced it and just told about that story. Roddy, you wanted to add to it before we dive a little bit deeper into this chain model? Because when I hear you describe this chain model, Knut, I immediately say, yeah, this all makes complete sense. It sounds very reasonable, very logical. There's not a single thing I would disagree with. Yet, as you say, many of these elements are not represented in reality. They're not being executed. The chain model isn't followed to the T in most organizations. So maybe we can hone in on some of the obstacles that are in the way of that becoming a reality, because it's great to, you know, read the book and learn about the chain model. Everybody's saying, yeah, collaboration is super important and we have to be adaptable in the narrative. I get all that, but there are some real world obstacles that people every day have to struggle with in order to make this a reality. Otherwise, this model would be working everywhere, and clearly it's not. I don't know who wants to tackle that first and sort of tease out a few of those obvious obstacles that we have to address so it doesn't sound like, yeah, sounds like a great model, and then let's go back to business, because business, where rubber meets the road, is different than the textbook model chain description.
Well, Roddy, personally, the book was published 5 months ago, so it does take a while. Yes, so it is happening, Boris. There's about 10,000 copies that have been sold, and but we are getting invited to a lot of town halls, which is a clear sign that people are resonating with it, with the format, with the model, and that are seeing the value and are connecting with the day-to-day, but it does take a while. Even 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, I wish maybe this book will be half as successful as that, but it takes a while for these models to propagate, and I'm probably not being humble enough now with the comparison. But that's number one. Number two, legacy. I would say the challenge, that's a fundamental challenge with new. I don't even know that chain is new. I mean, if you look into the way that we have framed it, the way the examples that we were given, perhaps some of the words that we have chosen, fine. I mean, if you distill it to the core, I mean, it's okay, it's soft skills, it's communication skills. This is not, I mean, Knut and I can claim some sort of genius, but there's no genius. This existed ever since people existed. But there's certain models that resonate better than others, and it's more about, do they click in the minds of the people and do they make a connection that can then influence their day-to-day behavior? Now, in reality, on the ground, if you go in supply chain organizations across the world, are they strong communicators? Are they taught in school, like marketeers and salespeople, to communicate? And are those even practices that are being taught at large in engineering schools, in supply chain schools, in logistics schools? No, they're not. So legacy and historical background is what will take a while to shift. It's the people understanding that, okay, this is actually, it's not just the hard skills, which are extremely important. Of course, you should know how to run a network, how to run a plant, how to run procurement. Of course, I'm not saying just throw that away, how to run an operations. But fundamentally, how much focus is there when you grow into your career, the first 2, 3, 4, 5 fundamental years? How much focus is there really on chain? Is there on collaboration, on being good at communication, on presentation skills, on influencing? I dare make an assumption, because I don't have the data on this. I don't think a lot. And for that to change, it means that the whole narrative and people need to understand and first figure out, you know, it's like looking in the mirror. Aha, actually. And it's happening, by the way, Boris. When we give this talk, It has happened already. Knut and I were in several of these instances, room full of supply chain professionals, like, oh yeah, you're right. Actually, I didn't realize. And it's like, it's a fairly, you know, common sense is not that common, or, you know, sometimes it's lying in front of your eyes and you don't see it. So I'm hoping that the book, right, and I'm hoping with the channel, and I'm hoping that as time passes by, there's going to be more people that realize, actually, this is a very important missing link that will make the difference between us as the supply chain organizations sharing how we add value to the organization in a way that they understand it or not. And if they don't understand it, that will impact our budgets, our headcount, our narrative in the organization, what they see and how they see what we do, everything basically. So we'd better ramp up our communication skills, because otherwise it's going to hit us hard.
And you can even use the train model itself for this narrative. Because if you think about what happens, let's just assume that there is the board does not have experience in supply chain. Then clearly, kind of to come with the narrative of, hey, we need to make sure that we work together better with customers, suppliers, and internally, that we look into this into everything kind of from a holistic point of view. So there is also a lot of benefits for other functions to understand and to build on this model.
Very fractal. So you're seeing the chain model inside the chain model inside the chain model. Yeah, that makes sense. Let's hone in on that last part, because we can't cover all the different elements of the chain model, but I do want to hone in on that narrative part again, because I feel like you've done that particularly well in that book. And just to be clear, because you, Radu, mentioned earlier, let's not give everything away that's in the book. You know, I don't know if you guys are familiar with that service called Blink, which is a sort of a service, is an app that summarizes popular books for you. Right. So, and I've used it for a while, and after a while I got frustrated, because, you know, hearing somebody talk about a book or summarizing a book or sort of distilling it for me is not the same thing. It just doesn't stick. You understand, okay, I got it like a bird's eye picture, but in order for it to really stick long time, you have to go through the entire story and really spend more time with the content than just a Blink summary. So I hope people will recognize that here too and get the book and not assume that everything we've talked about in the podcast today is all there is to it.
And like the trailer of the movie, Radu, I mean, it's supposed to entice you to see the real thing, and hopefully then certain things will stick. And then it's also the mastery, or the getting good at something takes a while. It does take a while. And I mean, nobody, you know, Bruce Lee didn't become a master of martial arts overnight. So these things do take a while, but you got to start first with the realization, hey, it is actually important. It will make or break how supply chain is perceived in an organization. It will break the story of supply chain or make in an organization. And we see it. I mean, I was with the chief supply chain officer. He has recently started in a very large Fortune 20 company, and he was saying that day in, day out, that's his main focus area, to be clear with his team on the value they bring and to share with them and how to communicate that onwards with their business units to make sure that the story of supply chain, the narrative of supply chain, is clear to everybody in the company, because that will dictate the budget that they will get. So it's an incredibly powerful tool if used correctly. And also at Uncle Global, I mean, we've started doing this. So we have an Academy and online, as well as courses that we're starting to deliver. And narrative for supply chain professionals, how to tell a narrative, is the most taken course. So there is definitely an understanding from, especially from the top. Mm. Most of the chief supply chain officers that we speak to on a regular basis see and understand this. And they've been through this themselves, and they face this challenge. So they're trying to inspire their teams subsequently to trickle down this effect, to get case studies out there, to get examples out there, to get them to be better at this skill. So I think there's we are on the right path, just like with other things, diversity or so on, sustainability, we're on the right path. Now the speed with which this will propagate will depend also on channels like yours, Boris. Thanks for having us on the podcast. Will depend on how many people listen to it, how many people find value into it, and so on.
No, I fully agree with you that ability to describe very complex things that are happening in supply chain in very easy to remember, memorable, visual terms. I think that's a skill that's super often underestimated. And it's actually frowned upon by some experts, because sort of feels like you're dumbing it down when you describe like the supply chain as Lego blocks. And there's a real benefit to being able to distill something and explain to me like I'm a 5-year-old. Remember how Radu said earlier that your daughter is reading the book or wants to read the book at 10 years old? That's great. I mean, if you actually can describe a very, very complicated issue in very simple terms, that's actually not a sign of you dumbing it down. It's a sign of you really grasping it and finding ways to make it memorable. And I think that's a skill that is super underestimated and oftentimes frowned upon. Knut, would you agree?
Definitely. And this is also reflected in when we talk to chief supply chain officers and we ask them, hey, do you invest in your people's ability to tell a story? Do you do this narrative courses? Do you set aside a budget for supply chain marketing? Everyone says, oh, that's a good idea. I do not do that. But I need to start. I need to start now.
And do they start? I mean, do they only recognize and acknowledge and then just go back to normal business? Or do they actually move then? Is there enough reason to compel people to actually jump in and actually change something about it?
As Radu said, right? So kind of offering this course on kind of supply chain communication narrative. So yes, it's starting. It's getting real. And people start to look into it and mastering.
Yeah. Awesome. Anything else, gentlemen, to add? I mean, again, we've only barely scratched the surface on most of the stuff and most of the insights that you've revealed through these conversations with these 26 exemplary supply chain leaders. But anything else to add? Anything that we've missed that you want to communicate to the audience before we close off?
I think we had a great discussion. So thanks a lot for having us. And all of us three are kind of passionate about kind of this bringing supply chain to the board and make sure that there is they keep a seat at the table. So let's make sure that we spread the news.
Exactly.
Yes. And Radu's already doing that. The most visible person on LinkedIn in supply chain, still Radu Palamariu, at least it feels like. So you're doing a lot of things right.
Thank you. I think we're living an exciting time. I don't come from supply chain. I fell into it 10, 15 years ago. I genuinely love the people. That's what made me stay. Of course, our business is headhunting and HR related, but I do love the people in supply chain. They're by and large super practical, well-intent, by and large, not all, but by and large, the larger population than, I don't know, other sectors that I will not name because I'll get myself in trouble. They're humble. They really fix hard problems. And I think it is high time that they know how to communicate the value they bring better and that they get to those C-level positions, not for pride, ego, narcissism reasons, but for impact reasons. Because they set, just like Tim Cook and Mary Barra, and they are trailblazers. They set the trail for other people to follow. And again, because it's so strategic, because people and companies are not competing on products anymore, you can pretty much make an iPhone, make a Samsung phone. If you disassemble it, you can make the same thing in 2 weeks, taking it to market, distributing it. The supply chain side of it, at global scale, you can't steal, you can't copy. It's impossible. You can copy the product. You can't copy the supply chain. So actually, companies are fighting on their supply chains. That is the USP, unique selling proposition. So that's my belief. That's why I think we should see more of supply chain professionals in C-level position because of the impact and of the importance that they truly bring to organizations.
Very well said. Great final words. Knut, Radu, thank you very much for coming on the program. I will leave a link in the show notes for people who are interested in buying the book, which is available everywhere, I guess, on Amazon. That's why I got it on my Kindle. But you can also get the physical copies I saw in bookstores. Not everywhere, but in Singapore for sure. So thanks, guys. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
All right. That was the Logistics Track podcast episode with Radu Palamariu and Knut Alleke. I hope you enjoyed today's show. I'm always happy to get your feedback, so please feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn. You will find a link in the show notes. If you're interested in exploring today's topic in more detail, I recommend you have a look at Knut and Radu's recent book called From Source to Sold. You will find a link to that book in the show notes as well. That was it for today. I'm Boris Felgendreher. Until next time.